PPI.org. KFAI.org. Hopefully I'm live. This is Disability and Progress. We bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of the show. Thanks so much for joining in. Charlene Dahl is my research team. Hello, Charlene. And she is muted. Unmute, Charlene. Oh, well. I'll pretend she said hello. My name is Sam. I'm the host of the show. Tonight, we have several guests with us. Sherry Wallace is one of them. She's from the Wallace Group. Hello, Sherry.
Hi, Sam. Nice to be here.
We also have Pam Crawford. Pam is from Corcoran. Hi, Pam.
Hello.
And we have Carrie Stordahl. Carrie is from Fridley, I think. Hi, Carrie.
Good evening.
And Jonathan Murray. Jonathan is from Roseville.
Good evening.
And last but certainly not least, Cora Holland Kohler. Cora is from Arden Hills. Hello, Cora.
Hi, Sam.
Thanks so much for joining me. And we're going to be talking about partners in policy tonight. And I think you guys are newly graduated. Yes?
We are.
Well, yes. Congratulations. Yes. I want to start out first by talking a bit with Sherry. And Sherry, you've been on several times now, but so for those who may not be as familiar, can you please talk a little bit or tell what Partners in Policy is?
Certainly. And Sam, it's Partners in Policymaking because
policymaking. Folks, I always forget that last one.
That's okay. It saves a few seconds, but partners in policymaking, and that really means that you learn to be a partner with someone as you could make policy. And this is around issues relating to advocating for people with disabilities. So you understand the laws, you understand how to speak up in a respectful way, and how to make partners, whether they're the school board or the mayor, or your own state representative, but making partners with people about policies in our society. The course coming up is starts in September, but it's a course that will include 35 people, and it goes from September to May. And these individuals graduate in May, and really, they've gone through a very rigorous training. They come from all over Minnesota, either individuals with disabilities themselves, or they have young children with disabilities. So it's a very rigorous class, but people usually come out very tight-knit, very good support group. And because they understand what each other is going through in raising an individual with disabilities or just maneuvering with their own disability.
And what is your role with the class?
My role is to rustle up folks for the next class. So every year, so I've been promoting these folks in their own community for now 9 months. And then they also are talking to their friends about partners mm-hmm. in policymaking. But I get people on the radio, and I also get people on their local newspaper to talk about what it means to them to have gone through this class. And these are wonderful candidates to share that the answer to that question.
So this was a different year because of COVID. I was going there.
It was.
So how did this change the class?
We had to, starting in September, of course, just follow all the rules and regulations about masks and distancing. And oftentimes the presenter that is right there in person flies in from around the country because they're the expert in the country. They're right there in the class and you get, you know, dialogue. So oftentimes those presenters were on Zoom. And it's just not the same, but these folks struggled and they really, you know, you get a whole load of information, but it's different when you don't have that dynamic instructor right in front of you. But eventually, as things loosened up a little bit, we were able to hear from people, do some exercises, and some of the presenters came to the room. But I commend these individuals and the rest of the class. It was a pretty strong class that they were determined to stick with it, even though they had to wear masks and they couldn't develop friendships throughout the room and throughout the month as they connect with it, as this class usually does, because they have a whole lot in common and they have so much to share. They become usually a Facebook support group that lasts and lasts and lasts.
And so usually, I believe if I'm correct, you often have experiences like going to the Capitol and things like that. Yes?
Exactly.
And what did you do with that this year and last year?
Well, we couldn't go to the Capitol, but we had some representatives come to us. And we couldn't, the county commissioners couldn't come to us to have small group discussions, but we saw some of them and through Zoom. And it was different, but it's like we still went through the process of trying to connect these individuals to people they probably aren't used to meeting and discussing policy. But they then shared, this is what it's like with my child and a bus, and my child getting on the bus, or my child in a school that wants him to quit kindergarten. Or this is what it's like trying to explain people when I really am uncomfortable with the situation and how do I speak up for myself. But the value of just having a lot of dialogue around the challenges of speaking up for yourself in various situations, that's what happened. But it certainly was a different way. And I commend these folks for really sticking it out and just grabbing as much knowledge as they could.
I'd like to go around and have each one of you guys introduce yourself, give the name of the city that you're in, and the disability that you either have or are living with, and with family members. And Cora, why don't you start?
Sure. So my name is Cora Holland Kohler, and I live in Arden Hills, Minnesota. And my son, Kai, he's 5 years old, and he has Down syndrome.
And how about you, Jonathan?
I'm Jonathan. I live in Roseville, Minnesota, and I'm autistic.
Okay, Carrie?
Thank you for inviting me to join today and assist in being a strong voice for individuals with disabilities. My name is Carrie, and my family and I reside in the North Metro. My son experiences several disabilities that include stress and deprivation disorder of infancy, early childhood, attention deficit hyperactive disorder, also known as ADHD, and severe anxiety. We knew we were enduring a life that didn't seem like most of the rest when our son was only 3 years old. He is the youngest of two, now 6, almost 7, and struggles daily to control his emotions, impulses. He's hyperactive, mentally blanks out, constantly agitated, always fatigued, and irritable at any given second, just to name a few.
Pam.
Hi, thanks
for having me. My name is Pam Crawford, and we're new to Minnesota. We've relocated here from Kansas City and built a home in
Charlene. Charlene is from Kansas City.
Oh, yeah. Well, now we're learning all about our new hometown and our new state. And our son, Max, is 17, a junior in high school, and Max has Down syndrome.
Excellent. Okay. Can each one of you kind of go around and maybe recall one aspect of the training or two, you know, whatever makes you, moves you, that one or two aspects of the training that has kind of given you the most power of learning and experience?
Sure, I can go ahead and start. I think, this is Cora, meeting with the county commissioners and having to give testimony in front of them in place of going, to the house, or that was pretty nerve-wracking. Certainly, like, you were nervous, but it was great because you got to practice telling, you know, a little bit about your story and just building that confidence. And using, you know, the knowledge and the tools and all of those things that you've learned throughout the class, which I think will serve me well in the future. I feel like my son right now, because he is pretty young, there aren't a lot of challenges that we're currently facing, but I definitely appreciate having all of this knowledge and having all of these tools and resources so that I can advocate for him as we start to maneuver the different things that he's going to go through in his life. Mm-hmm.
Wants to go next?
Certainly.
Jonathan, excellent.
I guess the most powerful experience I had was connecting with my disabled peers and the parents of disabled kids, expanding my insight into our state's broken disability support system. Their personal stories are not mine to tell here. So I'm here to share, you know, what I've learned throughout the year, hearing the presenters and classmates who are either using a disability support waiver themselves or have someone they love on a waiver describe what is necessary to apply for waiver services, go through the invasive MN choices assessment process, and the sacrifices that they have to needed to make in order to receive those services has really been heartbreaking. No one should be asked to describe in detail their personal challenges, how their personal challenges make it hard for them to function, as if it was their worst day of their lives or the worst day ever, to justify the need for services to our county, state, and federal agencies. You know, asking those invasive personal questions in that way that is not psychologically supportive is something that's, as a society, we've come to accept as taboo in almost any other circumstance.
Right.
And, you know, I would not personally ask those questions about daily functioning of a friend who survived an accident, a person with PTSD, or someone who survived sexual assault. And if I did that, I would be rightly called out and asked, what am I doing? And shamed. What I learned was I would want to do my best to support their needs without further traumatizing them. And expect I expect the people charged with managing our disability support systems and services to hold themselves to a higher standard and respect disabled people and their trauma. We should be asking ourselves as Minnesotans why we are demanding that disabled people and their caregivers answer these painful questions, especially when disabled people are likely to be members of marginalized communities who have survived multiple layers of trauma and should be accepting this because it's more convenient to put disabled people through a traumatic interview process for paperwork compliance.
Thank you, Jonathan. Carrie?
Yes. Overall, the most powerful experience during Partners was learning all the skills and processes of presenting and or communicating to the elected officials other policymakers. All the tools and resources we were provided over the last several months is invaluable information, and we can all now go and power change in the decisions that affect the disability community. However, personally, session two was very insightful for my family, where we are currently at in our journey. Being filled with wealth of knowledge on inclusive education and how to have effective meetings as my son started kindergarten fall of 2020 was incredible. It gave in-depth information on laws that related directly to education, particularly individualized education program, also known as IEP meetings. Mm-hmm. I am now able to have more meaningful, supportive, and positive meetings that will lead our son to educational success. Just a little less than 3 years prior, we were being told that there were zero resources for this kind of behavior, tools, or help that could be provided. And just like that, he was asked not to return to school after a very long and stressful month, not only for us as parents, but our son himself. Could you imagine being four and enduring all that? I wish I knew back then what I know now. If you are knowledgeable and confident in the laws, plus you know your rights as parents, that will make a huge impact.
Pam, how about you?
I have two things that I'd like to share that were pretty powerful. And it goes back to the comment you and Sherry were talking about on the class name, partners and partnering. Mm-hmm. I really, really got a lot out of just partnering with my classmates, you know, parents, self-advocates. I learned so much just, you know, continuing to learn. You know, I've been doing this for 17 years and, you know, every day is just a new day, and I really, really appreciated all the knowledge that I was able to soak up with them. Mm-hmm. And then I saw the other side of partnering, and that was as we continued to hone our testimonies that we were giving. During one particular meeting, I met with a staff member from Congressman Phillips' office, Luis Gonzalez, and really had a great connection with him. And as a result of that meeting, he invited our son to apply for the congressman's youth advisory council.
Oh, cool.
So it is cool. It's incredibly cool. And so just seeing how that partners and partnering with classmates, and then how that partnering can continue on with our elected officials and the community is incredibly cool and powerful.
And what a great, great chance for your son to have something, you know, take part in something like that.
Absolutely. Yes.
I would also now like you guys to kind of go around and talk about, you know, how you plan to share what you have learned, you know, with your community, and how you'll do leadership and being a strong advocate.
This is Carrie. Sam, I'm so glad you asked this question. To me, leadership and advocacy often go hand in hand and can be used to effectively accomplish tasks. This is step one, seeking growth opportunities by going out of my comfort zone to publicly share and speak about something that I live each day and I'm passionate about. If continuing to share my story helps one individual each time, it was worth every nerve or ounce of sweat. In all honesty, making myself more aware of groups within the community I can join and participate in to not only help make my voice stronger, but to feel acceptance, have constant support, and build new relationships. Losing friendships and even ending relationships with family members is real, and unfortunately, that's our reality. I learned quickly that any outside toxicity needs to go in order to focus and give all our energy supporting, advocating, and loving our son.
Pam?
I want to just continue to contribute and pay it forward to help other self-advocates and other families. So, you know, again, we've been doing this for 17 years and so many people have helped us up to this point. You know, I just want to, I appreciate all of this knowledge, and how I'm going to use it forward is to help with that. Mm-hmm. So I've already, you know, in addition to the letters that I've written and the connections that I've made with the Congressman's office, I've applied to be on a committee with our school district, and then I've also become a member of a work group through the Olmsted office, and the name of the work group that I'm going to be participating in is the Workforce Shortage for People with Disabilities. So I'm excited. That's yet to start. It's very new, but I'm ready to jump in.
Excellent. Jonathan, how about you? How do you plan to share what you've learned with your community and use that for strong advocacy?
I hope to work to ensure partners in policymaking program has more resources in its toolbox to better accommodate people who need fluid support. Some folks start out the program not knowing how to best communicate their support needs. And I believe that disability advocacy education programs need to be person-centered and trauma-informed. I want to learn to better support caregivers who are already doing high-stress work and to maximize accessibility of the Partners Program for caregivers, disabled people, and their disabled self-advocates. Practicing self-advocacy with my partner's colleagues has helped give me myself permission as an autistic adult to ask for things I need. When there's a social norm or expectation that hurts me, I can give myself permission to communicate that or communicate my needs to ask for change. I can look to disabled communities for support and validation, and I can use my learning to activate allies for both my personal support needs and in support of the broader community.
Thank you. Cora?
So my plan is, I think, just to continue to build on what I've learned in the class. Mm-hmm. But also, I currently sit on the board of the Down Syndrome Association of Minnesota.
Okay.
So when COVID hit, we were starting this class. I know in the beginning, I thought, okay, I'm going to get out there. I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to advocate. And then COVID came along. And then you start social distancing and you're staying home. And then I kind of felt like, okay, I didn't go out there and get involved in the things that I thought I was going to get involved in. So I think now that it seems like we're getting maybe past some of those things with COVID, just all the programming that the Down Syndrome Association of Minnesota is doing, just getting more involved with that and just getting out there and just, you know, being visible in the community and just advocating, you know, for individuals. So that's how I plan to continue.
Excellent. Sherry, how big was your class this year?
It was 27 people, not as many as we usually accept, which has been usually 35 to 40. And it is valuable. It depends on the, because it's free, everything is paid for. And when we have people with that are traveling long distance and their transportation is reimbursed, we just have to look at how the choices of who's in the class is going to use up the budget. But it's that's the goal, about 35 people. But it's also very important that it's very diverse, that males and females and all variety of disabilities, although one class might be a predominance of individuals with autism or children with autism, or then like this year, Cora's in sort of a separate group that it, not a separate group, but a group that of seven individuals where their children have Down syndrome.
Ah.
So we are, and last year it was six families had children with Down syndrome, but that is a community that's just getting to learn about partners in policymaking. Clearly the more individuals who are friends or connect well, that's just going to help that organization. As individuals learn to be partners and be concerned more about policy. But we are always want that wide variety, and older parents or younger parents, younger children, I think we go up to some mid-teens, but we want that variety to show it's not just one disability or one age or one type of family that this information is for. It's for the wide expanse of individuals, and it's all under the heading of advocating for people with disabilities.
Excellent. I want to talk a minute and have you guys tell me, each of you, if you met your double on the street or, you know, somebody on the street that you felt really needed, could experience great sense of wealth or something from this class, what would you tell them to convince them to take Partners in Policymaking class? Jonathan? Okay, Carrie, go ahead.
Okay. I will never forget the statement that was made in our very first session. And that was, this is equivalent to a master's program packed into 8 sessions. That is 120 hours of national speakers providing leadership training in life area topics and policy and systems topics related to individuals with disabilities. So many quality principles of being part of this program, like diversity, leadership skills, sufficient funding, and so much more. If you're ready to use your voice to advocate for yourself, a loved one, or a friend, and you have ambition to soak up all 128 hours of knowledge to empower the disability community, I encourage you to go apply for Class 39.
Jonathan, you want to go next?
Sure. If you were struggling with disability support needs for yourself or your loved one, or you sense a need to change a system, law, or program because it's not serving disabled people well, I would encourage you to consider applying for Partners in Policymaking. Partners in Policymaking provides an environment where you can network with other people who care about disability issues while learning relevant change-making skills and growing a team to support each other. We deserve community support and a dedicated time to plan the world we want for ourselves and disabled friends and family, so we can all do better.
Cora, how about you? Is Cora still here?
She is. She's muted.
Sorry, I'm talking on mute, talking to myself. I would say that you have nothing to lose, but everything to gain. I would just tell people that taking this class, just the knowledge that you gain and, you know, how you can make a real change in law. For example, there was recently a law passed, it's called Johnny's Law, and it basically prevents discrimination, providers discriminating against individuals with disabilities from getting an organ transplant. And so that was something that just happened in the last year. And so it's just a real example of how you can make change if you know how to make those changes and you have those tools. So I would just tell people that it's a great class. It's definitely a lot of time. It's a big commitment, but it's well worth it in the end. And just hearing other people's stories, especially I think hearing individuals that have a disability get up and talk about how, you know, it's a struggle to talk in front of people, but to see them just, you know, get up there every time and be the first person to get up there and tell their story, that was just so inspiring to me. So I don't know, I think it's well worth it.
Pam?
I would share that it's just an opportunity to take a little oasis. It is a lot of time, and it's a big commitment. We all get caught up in just our daily grind and living and parenting and being who you are. But just to have a little oasis away where you can think about things you normally don't have a chance to think about. You can connect with others who are going through the same thing or they've been through the same thing. So I think it's just a great time to take a pause for yourself. We've heard a lot about, you know, some self-care and just some self-care and some great enrichment.
Well, I have you there, Pam. Okay. What was the aha moment for you that you knew you needed to take the class?
Oh my gosh. The aha moment was, it was just incredible timing. You know, we were new to Minnesota. You know, we left our home of 28 years in Kansas City, to come here with our young adult son and our young adult daughter. And we had like figuring out where to start, who's on first, how do I do this, finding a care of doctors, finding all this. And so also doing it during the pandemic, I was having to read and research all this stuff. So as I'm reading, I came across an article through the Down Syndrome Association of Minnesota, and also some information from Gigi's Playhouse. And it was like, wow, here's a class, 9-month commitment. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is meant to be. You know, I needed to connect with people. I was trying to find how to connect with people. I needed to help our son build his social network. Here's a teenager in a pandemic
who yes,
butterfly and didn't have, we didn't know where to start. So it was just amazing how just timing was everything. And I'm so thankful for those articles in those newsletters to help me.
Carrie, how about you? Did you have an aha moment of when you knew you needed to take the class?
Yes, I absolutely did. I was actually referred to this program by an old coworker, and I really sat in him and had about it just because of the fact, you know, 8 sessions, it was 9 months long.
Right.
28 hour commitment. And, you know, my son was 5-6 years old, and we were just starting out trying to figure out where we should go. And sure. I didn't think I had the time. And last minute I said, what do I have to lose? There's nothing to lose, but everything to gain. And I am so thankful that I jumped in.
Jonathan, how about you?
I was asked by a friend over at the Autism Society of Minnesota. And they just felt it would be a good fit. And they were a previous graduate. And it's not, Partners in Policymaking sounded like a really interesting program to kind of explore some facets that I didn't know existed when I started the program.
How about you, Cora?
So my story is similar to Pam in that we relocated to Minnesota from St. Louis in 2019. And so we didn't start out in Minnesota with my son, so he wasn't involved in like an early intervention program here. Mm-hmm. So when you get here, it's like, where do you start? You know, who are the best doctors to take care of my child? What kind of services can he get? Can he get any services? Mm-hmm. So when I had the opportunity to join the board, Sarah Kerfman, the executive director there, had mentioned that there's this Partners in Policymaking class. And she just talked about, you know, all the different things that you would learn. And since I had all these questions about, you know, all of the things, all of the resources that are available to him or not available to him, she thought that that would be a good fit. So I am glad that I joined.
Now, I know you guys talked a little bit about, you know, what you would do for the community or how you would pay it forward or what would you do in regards to helping advocate for people. But what about personal? You know, what did this give to you personally that has been irreplaceable?
This is Carrie. For me, honestly, having a young child of just starting out, learning that he had a disability, gaining those relationships and friendships with my classmates, and really having that support and knowing that I'm not alone. I really truly felt like I was the only one that was going through this, and it's friendships that are going to last forever and support that I know will always be there going forward.
Cora?
You know, it's the same. I think sometimes you feel like you are alone, or, you know, I look at my child and my child is amazing. And, you know, you want other people to see the same things that you see in your child. So I think going to this class and talking to other moms who not just have children with Down syndrome, but just that have experienced some of the same things that I've experienced. Mm-hmm. It makes you feel like you have a sense of community, that you're not alone, that there's other people that are going through the same things that you're going through.
Jonathan, what has this class given you personally?
Much the same as Cora and Carrie, is that social network and walking us through building those connections that we may not have naturally connected on the street or found each other through a social network. Mm. Also, partners walked me through the concrete steps that I wouldn't necessarily do personally of how to ask for an accommodation that really fits you that most people don't ask for.
Mm-hmm. I just want to add one thing I've done this year is talk to early childhood educators around the state and say to them, do you have any mother or parent that you're dealing with that just seems overwhelmed and they don't know where to start and they have this anxiety and they just are overwhelmed, and this is a program that can help them get them centered just like you all are talking. I met somebody just like me and I didn't have to explain my son or daughter to them. They understood that they could act differently and that it was okay. And I just felt that those educators working with the very young parents, before the parent gets into some sort of negative thinking about my child who will never, instead comes to this class and said, my child does have a future. And that it was especially valuable when it's early on and you're just, and we all know with when there's early intervention, when there's early care that is positive and helpful and hopeful for the parents, you end up with a different child by the time they're a teenager.
Pam, I'm not sure I hit you as far as what personal thing this has given to you.
Personally, my experience is similar to what my other colleagues have shared. It's really just the connections and the reassurance, you know, brand new to the state, trying to figure things out. There was not, you know, clarity. There was not, you know, I was going in circles and I still am circling a little bit. I've been in this, you know, for over a year trying to get waiver service started for our son. And it is just reassurance that it's okay. You know, people understand, you know, I'm not alone, you know, I'm learning how to navigate better, but, you know, I've really gained a lot and appreciated that.
I want to, first of all, thank you guys very much, because I think it takes a lot to talk about these personal things and, you know, share things. But I do want to ask, if you could have what, like maybe tell your best story that you found that was your favorite story and that happened in the group. If no one volunteers, I'll pick on you.
This is a tough question. You said you weren't going to give us any tough questions.
No. I think I just said I wouldn't ask you anything you couldn't handle. See how what I did there? Yeah, if you had a favorite story that happened sometime in your whole course of things, what would it be in your 9 months?
I really honestly say I really connected with one of my classmates that, again, like I stated before, a lasting friendship, and already made plans for the summer, and I'm just really excited that to get that support.
Pam?
It's just some of my favorite stories are just, you know, because class was a little bit different, you know, we kind of were distanced and our tables were set apart. So, you know, we had a chance to really get to know our table mates well. And then we worked in small groups, still distanced. And I really know some of the folks in those groups really well. And it just got to admire, you know, like you'd mentioned, the courage that it takes to share these stories. And, you know, I really enjoyed the support they provided me in crafting the stories, because, you know, a lot of good input and a lot of good collaboration just to kind of help fine tune, you know, that testimony that, you know, and it just keeps getting better as I continue to practice it.
Jonathan, how about you?
I really have to echo Pam on that one. It was, I don't know, it was like going out to dinner dates with work colleagues. every day we were at the program, we got to know people, our personal preferences, and network. I won't say that it was better than a Partners in Policy would be without COVID, because we didn't get to do a lot of those natural follow-up after session things.
Yeah.
But I think we may have done more than scraping the surface at the tables and got to know one another, because it was almost a more one-on-one setting.
Cora?
I think it's pretty much the same as everyone, just having those conversations with classmates, hearing their stories, and just, you know, seeing yourself in those stories, or having someone say, oh, my son is just like that, or, you know, even my daughter is just like that. Just building, having those connections with people and just feeling comfortable talking with people. I feel like sometimes if you're talking with someone who can't relate to the things that you're going through,
yeah,
you feel judged, or you feel guarded in, you know, what you say.
Right.
Or they take for granted some of the milestones or whatever that you're celebrating in your own life or your child's life. So just having that community and that connection with people in the class, I think, was my favorite part.
Jonathan, I wonder, you know, these guys are here as parents, but you are here for yourself. And I was wondering if you have found that you're doing things differently from taking this class, like already, that are causing people to react differently to you, maybe in a more positive sense?
Not necessarily in a more positive sense, I don't think. I think it's more that I've learned the skills to engage people where they're at, in language to impact them. And I've always been very hesitant to ask for what I need.
Mm.
And partners, that wasn't something that was naturally taught me in school as a self-advocate. Self-advocate in the late 90s and early 2000s really wasn't addressed well for disabled individuals or individuals facing challenges as part of the curriculum in school. You're put through special education classes. But the focus on person-centered planning and empowering the individual to make choices was not a focus. And coming back and covering some of that in a supportive environment has been very helpful.
And did you find that it kind of came naturally once you understood the steps to take? Or did you feel that, wow, I really have to work to try to get myself to be brave enough to do this? Was it really hard to implement these things for you?
It's not. That kind of branches into a couple of personal autistic traits I got off the autism buffet. It takes practice or scripting. Some notes and a little bit of a script for this interview. And not everybody does that. Some people can do it naturally. I think a few others on this call had a few notes as well.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it takes a little bit more planning and to have a little bit of guidance in decision making and to be empowered to make those decisions where other people would naturally choose between the options they see before them. Mm-hmm. I tend to see like all the options and then like, what do I pick? Because I'm sorting through a lot of options that people take for granted. Like you just don't go down a one-way street because you just don't do that. and a lot of people with autism tend to have to consciously think through, you don't do that. So this course has just been very helpful in that supported decision-making that I need as individually.
Well, I've gone off the grid with a couple of these questions, and I will say you've done very well. So I wanted to ask you ladies, as parents, do you find that you guys have learned, is there anything that you feel like even as we speak, like you've noticed in the past months that as you're acquiring your information, you're doing some things differently? So maybe even your kids are reacting differently, how you're doing things, or people that you have to engage with are acting differently because you're implementing these tricks and tips that you're learning?
This is Carrie. And for me, yes, I actually, my son just started kindergarten last fall of 2020. So he was just actually reevaluated set of school years. And I was able to go into that IEP meeting and really have my notes taken with my highlighter and really fine point everything. And the meeting went flawless and I got everything I asked for, and he's continuing to get help. So.
Excellent. Excellent. Pam or Cora?
I'll go. I did want to follow back though on one of the favorite highlights from the question I forgot to mention, and I will maybe hopefully not embarrass anyone, but we had some phenomenal cake at one of our last sessions that Jonathan brought in. It was fantastic. So that was a highlight. So I think that this has helped, like similar to Carrie, and have, you know, continue to have meetings. You know, we've been having these IEP meetings forever, but now these individual, you know, education plan meetings, we've got some new strategies, which have been great. And I think just the encouragement and, you know, it's okay if you don't know the answer, but, you know, continuing to ask. And continuing to ask even if you don't understand the answer. So, you know, some of those have been very helpful.
Cora, anything that you've learned that you're implementing already that you noticed a difference with how people reacting to you or maybe your family or anything?
So mine would be in the same as Carrie and Pam, with the individualized education plan, the IEP meetings. My son is going to kindergarten in the fall, so we just had that. So I did feel more prepared going to that meeting, and just, you know, asking for things that I wouldn't have thought to ask for before. Either I thought it was either an inconvenience or, you know, they might say no, but it went well. And I just feel like having the training of partners makes those meetings easier. Before, it almost just seemed like you would go in and it's pretty depressing. Someone's telling you all of these things, basically that's, you know, basically wrong with your child. And it's just like, you know, it's overwhelming. So I do feel like I went in that more prepared. And then I'm hoping the skills that I learned is going to prepare me for something that happened this week. We had signed our son up for speech therapy, which he had last year at Gillette. And the insurance company sent us a letter saying that, you know, it's not medically necessary, which I kind of laughed at because it's, you know, it's interesting because he meets all of the criteria for having speech therapy. So them coming back and saying it's not medically necessary, it's just, you know, a fight that we're going to have to gear up.
Right, so, right. Well, good luck with that.
Thanks.
Sherry, do you want to tell everyone how they can apply for the next policy Partners in Policymaking class?
I would love to. It's all online. You can get detailed information. Partners in policymakingmn.org. And it is, there are many partners in policymaking categories because this is in almost every state, partners in policymaking, but it's for Minnesota. It's this class, Partners in Policymaking started in Minnesota, and actually the architect of it still is in the class every day, every session, and she monitors exactly what's going on. And it's basically just the brainchild of Dr. Colleen Wick. And it is, you get all the information there, but there's also a phone number that you can call that's also on the website. But it really is very easy to apply. The application is there as well. If you have vision issues or you need extra help in filling that out, you can call. The applications need to be in by July 9th, and then the decision is made within a month. Individuals then can plan for those sessions, but you know the sessions you're applying for. There's an emphasis of a great deal of funds are set aside for you to be part of that class, and we'd like everyone to take it seriously that you are applying for all 8 sessions, although things come up. But we really, it's important for the group dynamics as well, because as you have heard, they're really unique friendships and supportive relationships that develop. Okay. But it's free. It doesn't, expenses are reimbursed. And if you need a support person to come with you, their expenses are taken care of as well.
We have to wrap it up. Yep. So I encourage people to go on that line. We have people who listen to all over the world. So hopefully in the United States, if you are listening, you'll go try to type in your state and see if it's being held there. I think that would benefit everyone. Thank you guys so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. This has been Disability and Progress. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Charlene Dahl is my research team. Chris engineered tonight. Thank you, Chris. Sherry Wallace from the Wallace Group was here to speak with us about her policy and partners in policy making course. And we were speaking with Pam Crawford, Carrie Stordahl, Jonathan Murray, and also Cora Holland Kohler. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. If you want to be on my email list, you can email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. Thanks for listening. KFAI.